Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Hennick, and I represent Chaz Simonson on this appeal. Before going into my argument, I need to advise the Court that yesterday afternoon I learned that many of the citations to the trial transcript in my brief are in error. The reason for that is that the record, the habeas record that was provided by the Attorney General's office, they provided the record that they had, but their transcripts are slightly differently paginated.
We granted your motion to
Thank you.
Revise your brief. As resubmit a corrected brief.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will request that. The issue that I'd like to address today is whether the trial court, whether when the trial court excluded evidence of a possible innocent alternative basis or alternative explanation for the damage to the complainant's
hymen. I don't see how you could have evidence like that without a medical expert.
And we are not arguing here that it can be presented without a medical expert. What we are saying is that the medical expert that did testify and provided the general guidance that, one, a small child's, a small girl's hymen is extremely friable, meaning that it tears easily based on pressure on or near the hymen, that is sufficient expert testimony to allow the jury to then take the evidence that Mr. Simonson proffered, which is that when the child was a year old, she suffered from severe constipation.
Yeah, but no, I would think you'd have to, you would have to have an expert who said, okay, you've heard Simonson's description of what happened X years ago. Is it possible, likely, you know, within some degree of medical certitude, that this could have caused the wound that is allegedly the result of the rape? And then the medical expert may be concerned about the age of it, whether if that had happened years ago, that would have looked the same, you know, as when she was examined after the rape, that sort of thing. I think without that, a jury would just be speculating.
Well, and I would submit that...
How long ago was it, the alleged, that incident that Simonson wanted to testify about? How long?
1 year old at the time that happened. She was, I believe, 7 years old at the time of the alleged sexual assault.
So it's 6 years, and you'd want a medical expert in particular to say, well, if this happened 6 years ago, would it have the appearance, the characteristics of that were discovered when she was examined after the rape, or would it look different? Because you know how wounds age and change, and the child is growing, she's larger, that might affect things.
Yes, and I would note that the state did not present any evidence like that regarding the fact that it had been more than a year after the alleged sexual assaults before the sexual assault nurse examiner ever examined
her. But there's a difference between 1 year and 7 years, so or 6 years. So again, I think you'd want a medical expert to say, is this possible? Do things happen this way? And if they do, what do they look like, you know, 6 years later?
Well, certainly
the fact the child is growing larger, I would think that would have some...
Well, I think certainly if you wanted to prove beyond all doubt that this was caused by was in fact caused by a specific act, that you would want to have that kind of evidence. What I am submitting is that you are not required to have that kind of evidence. Under historical, use of expert witnesses, prior to the rules of evidence in the mid-1970s, experts were not allowed to even testify about ultimate issues like what the State Court of Appeals is requiring here. They could only provide the general, the general principles, the guiding principles, and the jury was left to make the reasonable inference of whether, given the facts of this case, given those guiding principles, there was a causation here. And similarly, in this particular case...
Witnesses have always been allowed to testify about causation. Sometimes they're allowed to testify about intent or about guilt. But obviously, whether X caused Y, that's a technical question.
And it is a technical question, and prior to the, and I cite in my brief the advisory committee notes to the federal rules of evidence. And those notes indicate that prior to those rules, the expert could not testify to the ultimate issue of causation. They could only provide...
That can't be right. That just can't be right. So you have an expert, and you have a plane crash, and the expert says, well, the rudder broke.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's asked, is that what caused the plane to crash?
Yep, and nowadays that is permissible.
It's always been permissible.
Well, I would respectfully disagree.
Can't be right.
Okay, well, I asked the court to...
Be unintelligible.
Well, and that was why they changed it in 1975, because there was this principle that the expert could not take over or have to spoon-feed the jury.
Yes, he can't testify about guilt, but he can certainly testify about cause.
And now they can. And the fact that they can now doesn't mean that anything less than that is irrelevant or speculative. As an example, in this particular case...
Well, you and I have had a lot of cases with each other.
Yes, we have, Your Honor.
In Wisconsin, and I always thought you could testify as to cause, even before 75.
Well, and it might have been different in Wisconsin. I'm relying on the administrative committee notes to the federal sentencing guidelines. And I also would note that...
The sentencing guidelines?
Or not the sentencing guidelines, the federal rules of evidence. I apologize. But I also would note that in this particular case, the state presented another expert, Lori Holmes, who was a social worker. She testified that a child, possible explanations for delay in reporting, because there was the one-year delay, that was one of the issues presented, whether the delay was caused because this, in fact, didn't happen or because of other reasons. She testified that various things could cause the delay, causation again. Even though she didn't examine this particular child, even though she didn't tie it directly to what this particular child said were the reasons for the delay, she was allowed to testify about cause for that delay because that's something that the jury reasonably could infer based on her general guidelines, the facts of the case, make a reasonable inference that this delay was not caused by what the defense was arguing, but was caused instead by the fact or the assertions that she didn't want to report on her father or something like that. So we have those kind of things where the expert testifies to the guiding principles. The jury is fully competent to make a reasonable inference from that. In this particular case, we have the guiding principles that a young child's hymen is easily torn by pressure on or near the hymen. We have the proposed or the proffered testimony that when she was 1 year old, it was pressure with the thumbs and the fingers right on the vaginal and rectal area, squeezing like trying to pop a pimple, resulting in pain and blood.
But wasn't the main defense here that this was a divorce situation, and this was a vindictive ex-wife, in effect, getting this daughter to say these untrue, nasty, untrue things about the husband? And that was part of the focus of the defense, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And that was why this corroboration, we have the witness who was vacillating. She said it happened, and then she said it didn't happen, and then she said it happened again. We had the evidence of possible manipulation and motive to manipulate on the part of the mother. And other physical evidence, there was no evidence of any bleeding or pain during the relevant periods of time. The mother testified she didn't see any of that. So that's physical evidence that suggests that the assaults did not happen. Given those circumstances, that's why it is so critical to the state that they have this physical corroboration or attempted physical corroboration in terms of the damage to the hymen, because the only evidence presented to the jury, for the jury to consider, that the only way that could have been caused is by something actually penetrating. So that was the expert's belief. She didn't know about the other testimony of the rectal stimulation trying to to cure the constipation because the judge kept that out. But that's why this corroboration was so important, because the evidence against the defendant was so...
Yeah, but the only issue is whether to make that plausible, you'd have to have a medical expert say, is this possible, and you know what would it look like 6 years later, and so on.
Well, I believe that, Your Honor, is more of a hyper-specific type of expert testimony than is really required for the jury to make a reasonable...
I don't think so. You're talking
understand
about
that we disagree on that.
Medical phenomena without a doctor.
Well, we had the nurse
no
who testified.
For it. There's no reason for it. Why didn't you just ask the court to appoint an expert for him?
I was not the trial attorney at the time, and this was not a public defender case. This was a retained case at the trial level, and it is still. But he did not have... I don't know why they didn't get an expert. Bottom line, I don't know. There's nothing in the record suggesting that.
To your causation thing, I think what you're referring to is the committee notes to Rule 704, where it says, in case of medical causation, witnesses were sometimes required to couch their opinions in cautious phrases of might or could rather than did. So you could still testify about causation, but you might be required to be tentative about it. You say, yeah, that could have caused this and could have caused that, rather than it did, in fact, cause that, right? Does that refresh your recollection?
Unfortunately, no, and I apologize for that. But in any event.
You want to reserve the rest of your time?
I will reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Hanak. Mr. Weber?
Good morning. Judge Posner's opening question really frames the analysis of the first issue. How can you present evidence like this, evidence of an alternative source of injury, without medical testimony to prove that that alternative source could have caused the injury that was observed? And the answer is you can't. It's not a hyper-specific application of the rules of evidence. It's a common-sense application of the rules of evidence. A defendant claiming that his Sixth Amendment right has been violated has to prove that the evidence that was excluded was relevant. And evidence in this case of the rectal manipulation isn't relevant unless he could prove through medical testimony, through expert testimony, that this alternative source of the injury could have actually caused it. Without that evidence, you have a chain with the final link missing. The required expert opinion testimony the expert testimony was required because it wasn't a matter of normal experience or lay understanding as to how this type of injury could have been caused. The nurse that was testifying was never asked whether placing thumbs on the exterior of the vagina to manipulate the rectum could have caused this vaginal injury, this torn hymen. The defendant presented no evidence that the manipulation that was observed involved any kind of penetration into the vagina, no evidence on that, and no medical records to show that the child was injured at the time that this manipulation took place. The jury would have been left simply to speculate, simply to guess, simply to ruminate over whether this was a possible cause or not. It's manifestly in the interest of Wisconsin courts to prevent that type of jury speculation. For purposes of the AEDPA, this isn't even close. It's a reasonable decision well within the scope of state decisions that deserve deference under the AEDPA. I would prefer to answer questions if there are any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Weber. Mr. Hanak, how much time does he have? 2 minutes.
Mr. Weber refers to the absence of any medical record showing that the child was injured at the time. I would also note that the state never presented such medical evidence or medical records showing that the child was not injured before, the hymen was not damaged before the alleged sexual assault, but was damaged afterwards. So the same kind of lack of evidence applies there.
How do you present evidence of that sort?
Well, exactly my point. How do you present evidence?
No, you don't have medical records of people who are... You don't have medical records of health. You don't have a doctor filling out a form that says, well, you know, I've examined, everything is fine, you know. Sometimes they do. But look, let me ask you about the sentencing issue.
Okay.
You said that somehow incest statistics show, or statistics show that incest, people who commit incest tend not to repeat their crime.
Yes, the records show that recidivism rates...
Is that something about children or what? Is that incest in general?
That's a good question. The records that I saw and that I presented to the court and that are included in the record here concern, I believe, child molestation. And they say child molestation, I think, is 25 to 40%, something like that, recidivism. Incest... And I don't recall whether they included that within child molestation or not, but that was more like 4 to 10%. So a very substantial difference.
What if most incest is fathers and, say, their teenage daughters? That would be a very different phenomenon from this kind of pedophilia.
Yes.
So I don't know how this... If that's what dominates the incest statistic, I have no idea. It wouldn't be very probative, would it?
If that dominated, that's
but
so that probably would not be very
we
probative.
We just don't know.
Is right. Okay. But what we have is the judge relying on generalities, and the generality was wrong.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hannah.